Hey, welcome to another edition of Freebie Friday. I'm John St. Augustine, whether you like it or not. And you must like it because you keep listening. And I find it fascinating that people send me notes. Now, not as much as they used to on a podcast, especially when people are subscribing and paying for it. They kind of know what they're getting into. I've still gotten notes from people that disagree with what I say, and that's okay. We're not all supposed to agree. If we did, most of us wouldn't be necessary. So it's fine to have differing opinions. That's what life's all about. I'm all about the action pieces of it. I mean, listen, I often struggle to not repeat myself, but I'm pushing 60, and I got more yesterdays than tomorrows, so I do tend to repeat myself just a little bit. And radio is all about repetition. Matter of fact, most of the media is about repetition. I don't sit through the news very well. There's two reasons for that, especially when it's like the 5 o'clock or the 6 o'clock news on television on one of the big three networks. They used to be the big three, and it was like big 300, but you get my drift. NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, and the rest of those, they're all kind of over on another piece for me still. So watching this stuff as it pops up is always an exercise in patience, because I think, at least my observation, experience, and opinion on that, is that it's now just the reverse. So the news is really about 22 minutes long out of 30 minutes. The other 8 minutes are commercials, which are basically just for drugs. So it's more like an infomercial for drugs for a half hour, interspersed with stuff that just pisses you off, because it's just astonishing to me. Maybe I've become empathic as I get older, because the things that used to never bother me and I never gave a thought to just grind my frickin' gears. And it's a repetition thing over and over and over again. And I've always felt like if you just poke at people with bad news over and over again, it diminishes the concept of what being alive is all about. At least it does for me. So I have a real hard time sitting through that. These commercials with actor portrayal to get you to buy drugs, because if you're not sick, you soon will be if you watch this shit long enough. And then you have these news things that aren't really new. That's the second part. There's nothing new on the news. Somebody's got to call it something else. It's not new. It's just same shit, different day. And I don't want to become immune to that. I mean, most of the stuff that's on the first, especially the first 15 minutes, is enough to piss off the good humor, man. It's not good for you. I mean, it's like constantly ingesting stuff that diminishes the concept of what you're all about. And again, in my opinion, what's the point? And they're trying to sell you things in between the bad news because you're sick. I wonder why you're sick, because you're watching shit that's pissing you off. There, got that out for you a little bit. That should have been held over for a Wednesday rant, which, by the way, I did not do this week for two reasons. The first one is the content that I wrote, and if you're listening to this and you follow me on Facebook, you've already read the Wednesday rant. The content did not lend itself for me to put it in podcast form. Believe it or not, sometimes I actually think about what I'm talking about or what I'm going to say, and I don't like to script things. I don't have a script in front of me today. I'm just airing it out. But Wednesday, I needed to have a focused point of view and a viewing of points, and I think that's sometimes possible. You can have a point of view, but then allow for other viewing of points, and to have that intersection, sometimes we can evolve as people out of that. I'm not kidding. I've seen it happen. You know, like civil conversations, totally disagree, start asking better questions, you get better answers, and people go, huh, never thought of that. No kidding. And one of the things I pointed out and always point out is the reaction to anything takes zero thought. Reaction comes from our limbic system. It's just like, you know, when the guy taps your knee at the doctor's office and you end up kicking him in the groin because it's just a reflex. And so much what goes on in the world, and especially in the news, is very much reactive. And story after story, react, and you get these emotional reactions to things until you become immune to them, and then we can't tell the difference between a reality show and what's really happening in the world, and the line gets blurred. I think there's some serious side effects to all that stuff. But Wednesday, I was writing about the death of Molly Tibbetts, and her death is more than just a death. She didn't die naturally. She was murdered. And for a month and a half, 2 months, the nation watched as this manhunt went on for Molly Tibbetts. And when the news broke that the body had been found on the side of the road, a 20-year-old, in the area of interest that Molly was missing, I was heartbroken. Now, you may have missed this, but I did not. A young woman Sadie Alvarado was found on the side of the road in Iowa, not far from where Molly went missing. And at first it was this, how is this body there on a Sunday morning, right, when this other woman's missing, about the same age, the whole nine yards. And it turns out it was not Molly Tibbetts. That comes later. And what I wrote about on Wednesday just bugged the living crap out of me on two levels. Number one is Sadie Alvarado's face and name popped up for maybe an hour on CNN and maybe even less than that on other news outlets. And then the focus went back to Molly Tibbetts. And it turns out that Sadie was also 20 years old, and her boyfriend either pushed her or she jumped out of a car, and he left her there by the side of the road for a day and then went back the next day to check on her, and she is gone because she had already been found. He turns himself in later in the day to the police, and he is a white male who is a non-immigrant, which means he's a U.S. citizen. Totally blurred over. So he's at the least, as they try to do the autopsy on Sadie and figure out what happened, whether she murdered, was she pushed, did she jump, he's facing prison time, if nothing else, for leaving the scene of an accident that resulted in death. A little blip on the news. Molly Tibbetts is found just a couple days ago. Heartbreaking. As a dad who has a daughter, can't even imagine. It's beyond my concept to imagine that. And the guy that they found is an illegal immigrant, and they're still trying to figure out what happened there. And the only difference is that there isn't a difference, in my opinion. Both these young women, both 20 years old, both in the same area, were killed, murdered, either by hook or by crook. Something happened, and it went down, and they're both gone. So two families in that same area are burying their daughters. And Sadie did not make headlines, and Molly did. And that's not anybody's fault. It's just the way the media picked up on it. I guarantee you, if Molly hadn't been missing, that Sadie thing probably never would have made national news. And that's unfortunate. So what I wrote about, and what bothers me the most, and let me just be clear about this if I possibly can. I'm ranting and raving all the time about how politics should not define who we are. And I'm all about that. Again, here you go. I'll give it to you early. It's not going to be the tagline of this show. I'll give it to you right now. If you've ever gone to a cemetery and seen Democrat or Republican on a headstone, please send me an email, because I never have in being alive for almost 60 years and going to funerals for 50 years. I've never once seen it. I see father, mother, sister, brother, auntie, uncle, veteran, beloved, but I don't see any political delineation on there. So what I wrote about has anything to do with politics. From my perspective, that two young women were killed, and it all of a sudden becomes a political football. And that just, to me, diminishes both their deaths. How dare any politician, Democrat, Republican, or other, make this a political issue? Must not have a soul. Doesn't have a sack hanging. Long gone. Long gone. And that's exactly what happened. When the Vice President of the United States is tweeting about how this illegal immigrant was found, we'll never forget Molly. I don't want to forget Sadie. She's the same age in the same area, killed by a man too, just about the same age as the guy that killed Molly Tibbetts. Nothing. Crickets. So I had to make that point. I had to make that point. So I could breathe the rest of the day. You know, I have three folders on my desktop. I got a lot of folders on my desktop, but three in particular just have numbers. 26, 50, 58. And no, they're not the combination to my high school lock that I still have. They're three folders and all have pictures in them. 26 murdered in Sutherland Springs, Texas, 9 months ago, including a woman who was pregnant and three of her children, by a 26-year-old guy who was the U.S. citizen. And I open the folder that says 50 on it. Murdered in Orlando, Florida at a nightclub out dancing by a 29-year-old guy, U.S. citizen. And of course, not to be outdone, U.S. citizen Stephen Paddock unloaded on a crowd at a concert venue in Vegas and mowed down 58 and injured 515. So that's a total of 134 murdered by fellow Americans and U.S. citizens. Crickets. Crickets. So, of course, the thing about the wall comes out. Let's build a wall. Let's get that wall done. And these deaths could be prevented. And I have friends of mine that I have great respect for as columnists. I can't believe they started putting this garbage up. That somehow these deaths could be prevented. But they didn't mention Sadie. Molly Tibbetts could have been prevented if this guy wasn't here. Yeah, but they didn't mention Sadie. And she's 20 years old. Will not see her 21st birthday because her boyfriend either pushed her out of the car or she jumped out of the car and he left her to die on the side of the road in the same area within miles of where Molly Tibbetts was found. And so when a columnist takes that and says, see this? Well, why aren't you looking 6 miles down the road for the same result of a girl the same age by a man who did this? That's called confirmation bias. That's when our biases, we got to search for something to confirm them so we feel better about ourselves. What a bunch of garbage. It is so irritating to me. And it's what keeps us in this endless loop of anger and hate. I'm already jacked up. I'm sitting here by myself in the vaunted Life 2.0 podcast studios. No idea what I was going to talk about. Really wanted to stay away from this thing. But I can't. I can't. I can't change it. I can't fix it. I can't alter it. Can't do a thing about it except do this. Vent it. Confirmation bias. We see what we need to see. We hear what we need to hear, which makes us blind and deaf and dumb. And again, this isn't a Republican thing or a Democratic thing. It's a human thing. We all do it. I've worked diligently to stay back off this stuff and just see things from a different perspective. It's taken years to do that. It takes serious work to do that, to pull out of that. Years ago, I took a college course, Psych 101, and a confirmation bias is where I learned, you know, in that class what that was all about. So outside of all the mumbo jumbo, I had to put it in words that I could understand. And it came out like this. We hear what we need to hear, we see what we need to see, in order to confirm our internal bias. Any information, in any form, outside of our bias, is discarded or ignored in favor of keeping our sense of righteousness intact, and therefore, our sense of self. No matter how egregious or destructive that information is to the common good. Bias makes us deaf, blind, and dumb. And it effectively makes us prisoners of our own beliefs with no chance of parole. Do you know why? Because our bias convinces us that everybody else is the reason we're the victim. And it doesn't matter whether you look at it on the micro or the macro. And you know why people don't undo that? Because they wouldn't know who they are. Our biases become the belief, the rudder that steers ourselves along the path of life. And while I'm on a roll, I might as well just keep going with this. I was going to try and do something all nice and smiley and fun. Maybe I will a little later. But I got to get this off my chest because I live in a country that I love. I serve this country. I'm a proud veteran of the United States Coast Guard. 4 years active, 2 years reserve. So I did my time. And I try to stand back as best as I can and be as objective as I can. And when I see this stuff happen over and over again, people that have zero consciousness or any thought pattern about anything more than the bias they carry around, I'm fascinated by that. Has your life not been hard enough as it is that your biggest worry in the world is judging somebody else? Man! So what could be worse than these two 20-year-old girls being murdered within 5 miles of each other? What could be worse than that? See, if we build a wall, then we could fix one of those. What could be possibly worse than that? I'll tell you what's worse than that. How about the grandmother last week that hung her 9-year-old grandson from the back porch with a cord from an iron because he wouldn't listen? She's not an illegal immigrant. She was his grandmother. How about the man who was convicted of murdering his father, stepmother, two half-brothers? The brothers were 16 and 4 years old. The prosecutors say that the man, who was also 16 at the time, shot his relatives in the head, then planted a gun in one brother's hand to make it appear he'd committed the murder and suicide. And prosecutors say he committed the crimes because he didn't feel loved by his family. And, of course, the latest and greatest headline in this slog of sorrow is the Colorado guy who's accused of killing his pregnant wife and two daughters before dumping them all at an oil work site. And he told the police it was his wife who strangled the children. And then he strangled her out of rage, according to an affidavit for an arrest warrant released on Monday. None of those people I just mentioned, the grandmother, the brother, the dipshit in Colorado, are illegal immigrants. They're all Americans. Nobody tweeted on them. None of the politicians are tweeting for them. We see what we need to see. We hear what we need to hear, which makes us blind, deaf, and dumb. Sadie Alvarado was 20 years old, just like Molly Tibbetts. The only difference is there isn't any. Here's another episode of Earth Matters with Bill Curtis.
It all goes back to Swedish engineer Sten Gustaf Thulin, who designed a simple piece of plastic in 1965 that would change the world. When Thulin came up with a single-use bag with a handle attached to it, the most important question in history, paper or plastic, was born. Since its inception, billions of bags have been used to tote groceries, making it easier to hold more stuff in one trip. Unfortunately, like many ideas, not much thought was given to disposing of the bags, and they ended up becoming a serious menace to the environment. Recently, the city of Chicago banned the use of plastic bags, and while some suggest that it might harm the economy more than the planet, only time will tell if moving back to paper will pay off. Of course, the easiest thing to do is simply buy a cloth bag that never has to be thrown away. Because Earth matters. I'm Bill Curtis.
So I can shift gears a little bit. I need a little break. I on one hand, kind of get worked up on that stuff. And on the other hand, I'm glad I get worked up on that stuff. I don't want to become immune to all this. I don't. You know, it's easy to get mesmerized and pulverized, and then become polarized to all this. And I think it's our duty to remain awake and vigilant and do what we can do. It's one thing just to shout into the landfill of Facebook. That doesn't change anybody's mind or do anything. Take action somewhere. And that's why the Earth Matters episodes are so important to me, because it gives you a chance, an idea of what's going on, that you could take action somewhere and actually make an actual difference. An actual action that makes an actual difference. And so, you know, you couldn't get a better guy to read him than Bill Curtis. We've been friends a very long time. He's very much considered an icon in the business of broadcasting after, I don't know, 300 years. But we're a good team. And I like doing research. I like to find the needles in the haystack that most people don't look for and then pull them out and say, do you know this is going on? Great. Now, here's what you can do about it. You know, all the information is useless unless it leads to transformation, in my opinion. And transformation comes out of action. So if you just sit back and go, wow, yeah, I know all that. Well, knowing something isn't the same as doing about something that you know about. It's not putting into action. I said this in one of the last podcasts. There's a lot of information in the library, but the door's locked. It doesn't mean anything. So if you don't apply what you know, then it's just inert. It's just there. It's static information. It's not kinetic. Go look them up. I'm not going to tell you what it is. So I was fascinated by a very predictable article in National Geographic, the actual magazine. I still get a big kick out of it. I think it's done so well. And while they've evolved over the years, they have to because of the media and such like that. I just, the reporting, the columns, the articles, how they cover the world literally, I think that National Geographic, just big shout out, because it's always been something to me that was so solid and sound in their research and the way they present material. I don't know how you could look at this stuff and go, yeah, that's crap. Anyway, there was an amazing article about plastic. And I've pulled it up online. I just want to read a couple of these pieces here that I think are important to know. And they go, okay, so what do I do about it? It said, we made plastic. We depend on it. Now we're drowning in it. The miracle material has made life in modern society possible, but more than 40% of it is used one time, and it's choking out our water systems. Laura Parker did an amazing job. The photographs in this article, if you've seen it, is by Randy Olson. This story is part of Planet or Plastic, a multi-year effort to raise awareness about the global plastic waste crisis. Learn what you can do to reduce your own single-use plastics and take your pledge. And easy to do, go online at the nationalgeographic.com and figure out what you can do there. So there's a resource. I'm telling you right now, unless you're living on some other planet, which I highly doubt because it'd be a long way to be able to get this download, there's something you can do about these plastics. You know, you go to here in Chicago, you go to Jewel. Now, I don't live in the city, so I don't have to pay for it. But if you use bags and you go to Jewel and you get a bag, it's like 3 cents or 7 cents. You have to pay for the plastic because, you know, it's a problem. So people are starting to use something that's really radical called a reusable cloth bag like my grandmother had. If plastic had been invented when pilgrims sailed from Plymouth, England to North America, and the Mayflower had been stocked with bottled water and plastic-wrapped snacks, their plastic trash would still be around 4 centuries later. If the pilgrims had been like many people today and simply tossed their empty bottles and wrappers over the side, Atlantic waves and sunlight would have worn all that plastic into tiny little bits, and those bits would probably still be floating around the world's oceans today, sponging up toxins to add to the ones already in them, waiting to be eaten by some hapless fish or oyster, and ultimately by humans. We should give thanks that the pilgrims didn't have plastic. I thought recently as I rode a train to Plymouth along England's south coast. I was on my way to see a man who would help me make sense of the whole mess we've made with plastic, especially in the oceans. And the whole thing goes on talking about, you know, a little bit of the history of plastic. It wasn't invented until the late 19th century, and production really only took off around 1950. And that's when the whole space age living started to kick in. You know, everything was going on in space age, and they come up with all space age polymers, and we became a throwaway society. There's an amazing picture in here. I might even use this in the Freebie Friday posting tomorrow. You'll see it. It's a picture of a typical American family in the 1955, and there's all this plastic up in the air that they're just throwing away. See how easy it is? You don't have to wash dishes anymore. Just throw it away. We'll bury it. Since it only took off around 1950, there's only a mere 9.2 billion tons of this stuff to deal with. Of that, more than 6.9 billion tons have become waste. And of that waste, a staggering 6.3 billion tons never make it to recycling bins, a figure that stunned scientists who crunched the numbers just last year in 2017. So I'll just read this last little chunk of it. No one knows how much unrecycled plastic waste ends up in the ocean, Earth's last sink. In 2015, Jenna Jambeck, a University of Georgia engineer professor, caught everyone's attention, or should have if you hadn't heard it before, you're hearing it now, with a rough estimate. Between 5.3 million and 14 million tons each year just from coastal regions. Most of it isn't thrown off ships, she and her colleagues say, but it's just dumped carelessly on land or in rivers, mostly in Asia. It's then blown or washed into the sea. And imagine 5 plastic grocery bags stuffed with plastic trash sitting on every foot of coastline around the world. That would correspond to about 8.8 million tons, her middle-of-the-road estimate of what the ocean gets from us every year. It's unclear how long it will take for that plastic to completely biodegrade into its little molecules. Estimates range from 450 years to never. You don't have to go very far online to find images of sea life that are in dire straits, and I'm not talking about the band, from plastics. And you see this and you say, nah, who cares? Then move on. I'll do the work for you. Seriously. At some point, I realized few do the work for the many. If you go online and look up plastic pollution in Asia, they're swimming in it. They create it. They swim in it. They're going to have to swim their way out of it. But over here, there's something we can do about it. So to sit back and go, see, they're the problem. I don't have to do anything. That's called apathy. So that's okay. I'll do double the work because I think it's that important. I don't have a problem with that. I really don't. I'm picking up after people all the time. It's a consciousness thing. It's a consciousness thing. Nearly 700 species, including endangered ones, are known to have been affected by all that plastic in the ocean. Some are harmed visibly, strangled by abandoned fishing nets or discarded six-pack rings. and many more probably harmed invisibly. The marine species of all sizes, from zooplankton to whales, now eat microplastics, the bits smaller than 1/5 of an inch across. And Hawaii's Big Island, on a beach that seemingly should be in pristine condition, no paved roads even lead to it, the author of this article for National Geographic walked ankle-deep through microplastics. They crunched like Rice Krispies under her feet. So there's a lot of lessons in all this. There's the most obvious ones. Humans create shit all the time with no idea what to do with it once we're done with it. We're a throwaway society. We've been doing it for quite a long time. We think that this is, you know, the earth is just for us to throw shit around. When I was a kid growing up in the 60s and 70s, it was not uncommon to see people throw garbage out of their cars, to dump ashtrays out at a stoplight. That's a mentality. That's a consciousness. And then, of course, came the whole Earth Day movement in 1970, which came out of the fact that the Cuyahoga River in Ohio caught on fire because of the oil and garbage in it. And Richard, I'm not a crook, Nixon. That was pretty good, wasn't it? I am not a crook. Yeah, not bad. Anyway, Nixon created the EPA to cover his ass, but doesn't really matter. It was created. And things shifted. Consciousness started to change. There are three guys that I credit with changing my consciousness over a period of time. Even though I was headed in this direction, without the influences of these three guys, I wouldn't be talking just about sports. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that, except there's not a hell of a lot I can do about that except complain. I could just talk about surface stuff. My consciousness could allow for that back about 50 years ago. But as it's changed over the years, as these influences came into my life, I started considering other things. This goes back really to confirmation bias, does it not? My confirmations of what I thought was true were challenged, and I grew with them. I didn't stay stuck in there. I didn't need those to be myself. I was able to grow out of those things and expand myself, much to the dismay of people who knew me over the period of time. I have no doubt that to some people I'm really freaking annoying, especially when I'm in person, because I'm so insistent. You know you're going to die maybe tomorrow, right? So what are you doing now? I'm not sure. Well, why don't you get your shit in one sock and let's figure something out? And there's no greater place to do that than when it comes to the earth. That's our life support system. Those three guys. Teddy Roosevelt. I read about him in Childcraft books. Had to be when I was 8 or 9 or 10. And it was a story about young TR living in New York and going down to the wharf. And there was a dead harbor seal. And he was fascinated by this animal he'd never seen. And TR was a sickly little kid. Wasn't supposed to survive. Wasn't supposed to make it. And he was taken with the seal, and it kind of gave him life to have purpose. He had something to do. And so he measured it and studied it and drew pictures of it. And when the thing was stinking up the dock, they eventually lopped its head off and gave the skull to young Teddy. And that's how the Roosevelt Natural Museum started, in his house, that he was about 10 or 12 years old. And his life to me was, and still is, a guidepost about overcoming adversity, about dealing with deep loss. He would not be the man that he became without all those things, the adversity and the loss. And I find it just one of the great quirks of history that the Republican Party at the time stuck him in the benign VP slot behind McKinley because they felt he was a troublemaker, because he was too progressive. He wanted social reforms and environmental reforms, and he wanted business to work, but he didn't want to override everything else, and he wanted people to be treated fairly and, you know, radical ideas like that. McKinley gets shot, dies. Teddy Roosevelt becomes a two-term president, changes everything. His life, more than any person, living or dead, that I've been connected to, even those close to me, has resonated the most. I have his picture right here on my desk. And he's staring at me all the time. And it's like he's like, what are you going to do today, kid? What are you going to do about this, kid? What do you think about this? He's been gone a long time. I just think, and I've always felt, that when someone who has been important in your life takes their leave of absence, it's upon us to do a little bit of their work. And so he was just this massive influence in my life. And to this day, as I said, I've read everything about him. I've done shows over the years with you know, experts and people. You know, I remember did one. I'd have to find it. I did one with his great grandson at one point, and a couple other guys that wrote books, and you know, just steeped in this stuff because there's just so much to take from that. And this is long before, you know, the whole thing about life coaches and how to live a life. He just lived it. He just got it done. He just dug inside himself and pulled it out no matter what and pulled himself forward. And I'm indebted to that influence, to that little Childcraft book that said, if he could do that, what could I do? I'm not going to be the president of the United States, even though I've toyed with the idea. So maybe I'll run. I get about 14 votes. Yeah, it'd be all right. I'm not going to be the president. But there was a great influence there. I don't think it was about him being president for me. It was about who he became in the process of being the man he was. That gives me such moment and measure. And then the second guy that drives these rants of mine when it comes to the environment is Jacques Cousteau. I was a kid in Chicago. The ocean was a million years away. But on Tuesday night at 6 o'clock, the underseer wheel of Jacques Cousteau brought it right into the living room. I remember vividly, my mom and dad had a little black and white television set from Sears. It was up in their room. And on Tuesday nights, I would excuse myself after dinner and doing the dishes and my homework, and I'd run upstairs and I'd watch that for a half hour, riveted on the bed. I think that's at the time, you know, like there was like one commercial break in the middle of the half hour. It wasn't every 3.5 seconds. And it certainly wasn't for Viagra. But I got to watch this man go underwater and breathe underwater and see things that I just thought were the most fascinating things in the world. Sharks and whales and dolphins and coral reefs, and oh my gosh, I just sucked it up. And I thought to myself, that's a whole nother world that I'm a part of and know nothing about unless I turn on this show. Man was a pioneer in so many ways, I can't even explain it. Can't even explain it. One of the quotes that he has that ties right into this little, what's turning out to be the Friday rant, apparently, he said that water and air, the two most essential fluids for life on Earth, have become garbage cans. He said that 45 years ago. But I guess we're a little too busy watching reruns and dancing with who gives a shit. And until problems knock on your back door, they're somebody else's problems. You do know this. Doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a bankruptcy, a divorce, illness. Doesn't matter what the problem is. It's always somebody else's stuff until it's your stuff. Then you go, why didn't somebody tell me about this? Oh, we did. And so in my observation, opinion, and experience, outside of any scientific studies, just as a human being who's alive at this time, we're in the change that we've created now, and we still don't get it because it hasn't happened here. Those earthquakes are somewhere else. All those fires are out west. You know, the flooding hasn't hit me, so it's just something on TV. We don't know what reality is and what isn't anymore. Those days are long gone. So until it's in your yard, it's not real. Even then, it may not be real. I took a walk yesterday to the post office, about a mile and a half round trip. And I thought about when I walked from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan to Chicago and back, and how much I saw and how much I let go of. And being outside to me is like totally rejuvenating. And then I realize how much time I sit working in front of a computer and staring at the world through this trusty, dusty Dell of mine. And so just a mile and a half walk shifted everything. Felt better, felt good to be out in the sunshine. I mean, I'm outside enough anyway, cutting the grass and doing stuff, but this was just a walk with a letter sending to a friend. There was nothing electronic about it. And appreciating that, while we have that, I think is about maintaining a consciousness that this stuff is important. So you got Teddy Roosevelt, you got Cousteau, and it was funny, the other night we were watching Mike and Molly, the TV series, and at one point, Mike's up on the roof. If you've watched this show, you've probably seen this episode. Mike and Vince, who's Molly's mom's boyfriend at the time, apparently, this prototypical Italian guy, they're up on the roof cleaning out the gutters and such, and it's pretty funny. And then Mike's partner, Carl, as a cop, comes up there looking for him, so he gets up on the roof. And then the guy who works at the diner is looking for all of them, and he gets up on the roof. And then pretty soon, Carl's grandmother starts looking for him, and she's heading up towards the roof. And in the meantime, they're having this conversation about life. and how they wish their lives had been different. And at one point, Vince says, how about that Jacques Cousteau? Was he the greatest guy? What? He used to go underwater. He'd go swimming underneath there and do all this stuff, and I thought it was the greatest thing in the world, and I wanted to go too. And even though it's a sitcom, he was making a huge point. So all these guys were up there on the roof being, you know, doing guy stuff and kind of wishing their lives had been different a little bit. And by the time Carl's grandmother gets up on the roof, they're singing John Denver's Calypso. And then is just like right this second. It catches me because I miss him. We were good friends. His voice mattered, and more importantly, he taught me that my voice mattered. I didn't know it until he asked me the question in 1992, in the bowels of the Wang Center Concert Hall in Boston. I flew out there totally on a whim. I didn't know why I was supposed to go see him. It was one of those nudges from spirit, and I fly out to Boston to see John, and Chris O'Connor, God bless him, John's road manager for many, many years, says, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm supposed to talk to John. And he's about what? I said, I don't remember. I don't even know. And he sets it up, and it gets moved around a couple times. And finally, after the concert, it was a wonderful, wonderful concert for the Catholic Charities of Boston. John raised like $250,000 for them, you know, did the show, paid all the musicians and raised $250,000 for Catholic Charities. And we're downstairs underneath the stage at the Wang Center. And we're having this conversation. He's like, so what are you doing here? I'm like, I thought you'd know. There's a brilliant answer. And he didn't know and I didn't know. And he asked me if I'd brought him something. And I had these letters in my pocket from a school that I had spoken at. And if Colleen is listening, because I think she's a subscriber, those letters came from the kids she was teaching. And I just remembered that all these years later. And I gave those letters to John, and they were and the letters were from kids about, I want to do something to be better with the planet. And, you know, that's not airy-fairy bullshit. These are young kids who get it before we get corrupted. And I gave him those letters, and he's going through them, and he gets this enormous grin on his face. You know, when John, there were certain times John would smile, and I thought it was like how I felt when I got out of school early on a Friday. It was that kind of grin, you know? And so John took these letters, and he looked at me, and he looks up and looks back at the letters, and he puts his hand on my shoulder, and there's no one else in the basement of this place, a couple bare bulbs, and we're standing there kind of just like a couple of guys. And he puts his hand on my shoulder, and he looks me in the eye, and he says, John, do you know that your voice matters? Nope, I didn't. And then he said, it does. And I know the coming years are going to prove me right. And that's all he said. And up to that moment, I'd never given that much thought. That was for Teddy Roosevelt to do, and Jacques Cousteau to do, and Bill Curtis to do, and all these other people to do. Those are the people, not me. I'm just a broken down football player guy who's trying to find his way through life without causing any more harm or pain than he already has. But John Denver put me on spot. Do you know that your voice matters in all things great and small, and how you use that to lift things up or to push them down for the greater good or for the greater harm of this world? That's important. It's something to decide. And you do it in every moment. It's not just when I'm on the radio. It's when I'm at the post office yesterday helping somebody write a label out or letting somebody cut in line in front of me at the supermarket. I don't give a shit. It's every little, I have to have a consciousness about it all the time. Because if I don't, here's the downside of this. This is called the curse of consciousness. If you're not aware of what's going on, when your ass is getting kicked, you don't know why. You become a victim. But when you start to wake up a bit, and you get conscious, there's a curse with that. Because when you get your ass kicked, you know you're part of it, and you're a participant, and somehow you're involved in it. And that your responsibility or your ability to respond comes out of participating in the very changes that are giving you difficulty. That there's a stewardship that goes with being alive, basically. Otherwise, you just showed up here. I don't know. My parents went on a date. Next thing I know, 9 months later, I'm here. How you doing? If that's as far as you want to take it, go for it. My guess is that people listening to this, you've kind of taken it a little bit further than that. Life has kicked your ass enough. You go, okay, can maybe there's something else going on here, and I'm not sure. Let me give a listen. So I appreciate that. But without those three guys, especially John at the end, I mean, I didn't know Teddy Roosevelt long gone before I got here. Jacques Cousteau, never met the man, only through his television shows. But John and I were friends. And true to his word, 2 years after that meeting, I got a phone call one day from his office asking if I would take Dr. Mae Jemison's place speaking at the Windstar Foundation just weeks later, because she had to cancel. She was our first female black astronaut, and Dr. Jemison had to cancel. And John said to call you, it's time. And I hadn't written a book, much less three. I'd never been on the radio. The only talks I ever gave at that point were at schools. But he saw something in me I did not see in myself at that point. And because he saw that in me, and he made good on that and put me up and said, okay, let's see what you got, kid. I stood in the Aspen Music Tent in the last week of August into September of 1994, and I just talked about the ripple effect and the human family from my perspective and the curse of consciousness and all the things that were going on. And I'll never forget when I finished and I did this poem, The Human Family, there was a standing ovation, and I didn't know why they were standing. I wrote it, but it came from some other place. I had written it a year earlier. But all I did was, I was the scribe. I was the PVC pipe. It just came through me. And I was amazed by that. It was the first time I'd ever had, you know, a couple thousand people stand up and think what I said had value. John was right. When that was done, and Roland Smith, who's just an incredible human being in his own right, finished interviewing me after I spoke, I walked out the back door of the Aspen Music Tent. There was 100 people lined up to say hi to me and talk to me and thank me. And one woman in particular gave me a little angel. It was a piece of like soap carved angel, like soapstone, not out of soap you take a shower with. And she said, thank you so much for being here right on time. I needed to hear everything you had to say. that just blew me away. Since that time, I've done everything I can mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, and financially to live up to what John saw in me. That's why I'm doing these podcasts. I'm doing it because of him, because of Jacques Cousteau, because of Teddy Roosevelt, and 100 other people in line that have affected me in such a way I think I'm supposed to do something while I'm alive instead of just take up space. And so this Freebie Friday, without question, has been all over the map. Not going to apologize for it. That's just the way it is when you get to hit the download switch. So as I'm getting ready to finish this up, I wanted to make a little pitch about the whole concept of being able to take information, transform it into action. And there's no doubt that over the years, when it comes to plastics especially, the awareness has gotten up. You know, you can't go anywhere now without knowing this, because if you don't know it now, you know it. I just told you. But you got to know that single-use plastic is like, you know, we're killing ourselves here. And what affects one species eventually affects all species. And when you think about the amount of plastic that's floating around and the amount of toxins that come out of that, it's fascinating to me. The plastic water bottle thing, I've said this before, I'll say it again. The most brilliant marketing in the world is when you can get people to buy things they already get for free and think they need. Like, you could turn your faucet on and drink water. If you're worried about that, you could buy a little filter. So it's a simple thing like that. It's a consciousness of, if you can do at least an 80-20, that 80% of what should go in the landfill ends up in recycling instead, and flip-flop it, instead of 80% of the stuff just getting buried, take a diligent, conscious, deliberate effort to recycle everything you can. Even though you can't see the result, it's an action you're taking that matters somewhere down the line. That it doesn't end up in the frickin' ocean. At least there's a better chance that it doesn't. I can't think of one thing outside of my kids that's more important to me than the life support system that my grandchildren have to depend on. And having at one point going, Hey, Grandpa, how come you were just watching TV when all this shit was going on and you didn't do anything? Well, let me tell you, son. I'll tell you how it is. Oh, blah, 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 blah. And fittingly enough, just as I'm wrapping all this up, the recycling garbage truck has pulled into the alley. Here, give a listen. I'll take that as a sign to wrap this sucker up. Until next time, reduce, reuse, recycle, and respect it. There's no place like home. Be well. Safe travels. Thanks for subscribing and listening. Adios.
On a crystal clear ocean, to ride on the crest of a wild raging storm. To work in the service of life and the living, in search of the answers to questions unknown. To be part of the movement, part of the growing, part of beginning to understand. Calypso, the place that you've been to, things that you've shown us, the stories you tell. I, Calypso, I sing to your spirit, the man who has served you so long and so well. You bring us beside you, to light up the darkness, to show us the way. Although we are strangers in your silent world, to live on the land we must learn from the sea. To be true as the tide, and free as a windswell, joyful and loving, in letting it be.